Hello, this is Hiroshi Shibe with another episode of Satoshi's Treasure Hunters. And this episode is a little bit different. It's a continuation of my thoughts about the disbursement of the prize money between clans or hunters, if you will. I wanted to talk about a key component, which is the actual Bitcoin address, or addresses, if you will. What kind of address does the Bitcoin prize money, what is it? Is it a 1, which is a legacy Bitcoin address? Is it a 3, a SegWit address? What are the UTXOs? And what about all those Bitcoin forks and airdrops? So, so it's a bit of a special episode, and let's get into the discussion of it. Hello, this is Hiroshi Shibe of Satoshi's Treasure Hunters, and this episode is about Bitcoin address, in particular, the Bitcoin address for the prize money. Now, as of now, of recording this episode, which is July 22nd, we don't know what the actual Bitcoin address is for the prize money. All we know is what the game makers have promised, which is that the Bitcoin address will, when the private key was shattered into the 1,000 pieces, 400 of which is what is needed to unlock it, that it was a 1 million USD equivalent at the time, I guess you could say, the game started, or the shattering, if you will. And as because of that, because of the shattering of the Bitcoin private key, we know that whatever that Bitcoin address is, whatever amount of Bitcoin is in that address, is a set amount. Whether it be, as I discussed in the, and there will be a link right here, and at the end of the video, it could be as something as minimum as like 190 to up to 300 Bitcoin, because we don't know when the Bitcoin address was shattered. Depending on when they actually shattered the address is how the amount of Bitcoin could be. Because, you know, fluctuation in pricing and things of that nature. And given the a lot of the detail and care and the unique nature of many of these particular clues that have dropped since the beginning of this game, we know that some time and effort has been made for these particular puzzles. Many of them are not very easy to do. We have a lot of geolocation puzzles. There's some marketing components with, you know, with Binance, which is a company, the company Coinless for the zero knowledge key. Like I said, the geolocations throughout the world, having people in those places, or at least being having the ability to task people to go out there and place the different flyers for the QR codes, or actually having a field agent in place at those geolocations. A lot of time and effort and care has been done. Some of the clues, the way that they're written, and how some of them are kind of interlocking or interconnected. How you solved one clue for a particular key, that particular puzzle, could in a sense help you solve others. So we know there's a lot of care and time and effort has been put in by the game makers. But as of, like I said, as of this recording, we don't know what the actual Bitcoin address is. And I think that's important to kind of discuss, really, because it can kind of, as I discussed in the clue video, you know, the amount can indicate how you want to disperse the funds. But this is more than just, you know, 190 or 200 Bitcoin or 300 Bitcoin or whatever that amount is. There's more to it than just the actual amount of Bitcoin. And so one of the things I want to talk about is forks. So here is a great site that kind of breaks down the different types of forks that there are. It's called ForkDrop.io. The first big fork was, of course, the Bitcoin Cash or Bcash fork that occurred during the whole SegWit 2x SegWit saga that occurred. And since then, not only has that that particular fork forked in and of itself, but there's been many forks since then. And depending on the nature of the project, it could then off the legacy, you know, the first Bitcoin blockchain, the one that we know, the big daddy, if you will, or Bitcoin Cash. And some of them active, some are not, some are straight up scams. And I just wanted to talk and considering the fact that depending on when the Bitcoin address was shattered, you have the concept of some Bitcoin forks that could be associated with that address. And even since then, that address, you know, is bagged and tagged, if you will, could actually participate in some of these forks. So let's kind of go over the guide here on fork.drop.io. So Bitcoin fork coin count. There are 105 Bitcoin fork projects in total. Of those, 74 are considered active projects relevant to holders of Bitcoin. The remaining 31 are considered historic and no longer relevant. And additionally, there are 22 altcoin fork projects, which have some similarity to Bitcoin fork projects, but their heritage is from major altcoins. So there are a large variety of projects that are referred to as Bitcoin forks. Additionally, there's some ambiguity of what qualifies as a fork. And since the exact nature of each project varies, at fork.drop.io, we do not track projects that are simply using the Bitcoin source code. We focus on projects that issue coins via some inheritance of the state of the Bitcoin ledger. This page is a live representation of our data set. So, for example, like Litecoin and some of the early altcoins, they built off of the, basically because it's a Bitcoin is an open source project, they basically copied and pasted some of the aspects of the Bitcoin project and made adjustments according to what their needs were. And so they're not counting those. They're basically counting those that actually have to actively deal with Bitcoin itself. These fork projects are listed with more specific detail on our main page. While they're ranked for relevance and importance, we also have a alphabetized list of comprehensive on our page. So 74 active forks operational and 45 projects that are currently operating blockchain networks capable of transacting. And so you have a whole bunch here. 29 projects do not have a currently operating blockchain. Types of Bitcoin fork projects, you have straight forks, passive airdrops, registered airdrops, and a blend. 45 are straightforward blockchain hard forks directly or indirectly originating from the Bitcoin main blockchain. Where is it? You know, Bitcoin Core, Bitcoin File, Bitcoin God. Like, there's some really weird ones on here. SegWit2x, Bitcoin Classics. 11 are altcoins issued to passive holders of Bitcoin. 12 are airdrops. Issued to holders of Bitcoin that additionally participate in registration process. So if you register your Bitcoin address with that project, you could then, in essence, get these particular tokens or coins, if you will. And let's look at their main page here. So this is a pretty comprehensive site if you wanted to take a look at it and see for yourself a lot of the data sets. So we have like the Bitcoin Cash, Bitcoin SV, list the supply, the 1-to-1 ratio price is right now Bitcoin Cash is $316, Bitcoin SV is $168, and so you have that. So within the last time. Bitcoin Gold. So depending on, let's see, I know for, man, like if some of these they had like when the actual forks occurred. So we have to go here. Let's see, let's just click on one, Bitcoin Stash.
Okay, that's actually a Bitcoin Cash fork. I'm not interested in that. Anyways, the point I wanted to make was beyond just the Bitcoin value or the USD value, whatever amount of Bitcoin is in that address, you have these additional forks that whichever group wins could, in essence, they could, depending on replays and all that, could benefit from. And so that's an additional added value to that particular Bitcoin address, depending on when it was created and these different forks that have happened and continue to happen until probably towards the end of whenever whoever solves the particular prize. And some of these are straight up scams, so you have to be very cautious. Some are just meh, it might not be worth it. And there are people that are not, you know, they don't want the value of any kind of to them as trash coins. But that's something that you have to consider when you're part of the group of, you know, that it does have monetary value. Do you just leave that money on the table? Maybe not everyone agrees with that. And you could do something where you can do something separate where anyone who wanted to take that monetary value, that particular value, you can disperse it to those individuals right out. Or you can use it for a special prize where you can go, okay, we know what the fork value is for this Bitcoin address. Because it's been revealed and we bag and tag and got the estimate of all the different valued forks that actually have some significant value and are not trashy or scammy. And we'll have a particular prize. You know, if you do X amount of things for the group, you can give that. Maybe that can be the mob tax, if you will, the value from those forks. To people that, like, you know, I talk about the lurker coins where you don't actually use the Bitcoin prize funds for that, but you use the forks and that value to just to give to people that are part of the group or whatever. Or you can't really give any kind of weighted value to their contribution, but you know that they've been participants or part of the group or something to that extent. So that is an option. The other thing we have to think of is the UTXO. If it is a one or SegWit address, there's a, you know, how the funds are dispersed, stuff can get eaten up in fees depending on how large or big your group is. In particular, you're paying for all the UTXOs that is in that particular Bitcoin address. So depending on, like, do they take it straight from the mine and it's just one input? And they put it in there, or you have a bunch of people contributing, you know, whatever amount of Bitcoin it did to the address, and all their that transaction history is going into that address, and so it can get very bloated, if you will, if you think about it in a sense. And for example, if you look here at the richest addresses, you have, you know, for example, Binance has a SegWit address for their Cold Wallet, and it tells you the first time it's in. They created this in October of 2018. The last out was May. They've had 154 number of outs. And so there is in 216 ins. So there is a bit of a UTX weight to that. Let's see. And you can look here, like at the top dormant 5 years of Bitcoin addresses that just haven't moved. In 5 years, you have one fee, which has 293 ins, 79,000 BTC, value is 837 million. Whew. Has no outs, last outs or number of outs. So it came straight from the mines, if you will. So there's not really a huge UTXO input for that one. Right here, the 1-2, it has 4 outs. So somewhere around 2010, it dispersed 4 outs, if you will. But it had 89 ins, so whatever transactions they had in, it came in there. And that could, like I said, it could get things a little dicey when eating up fees. Go back. And these are the unspent transactions, cumulative chart of what is out there. And you can follow this chart here. And to that extent. And so there are a lot of dust. There's a lot of UTXOs out there. If it's a one address, when you start dispersing the funds, you're not going to get that SegWit discount if it were a three address. And that is important. And we'll get into the UTXO thing in a moment. But I just wanted to acknowledge that that is something that has to be considered. Also, this site here has all the different kind of crypto airdrops, if you will. I think it's the same people who do the fork drop IO, all the different airdrops. So you have that added value, if you will. There is a site where you can go findmycoins.ninja, where you can locate coins to redeem on your Bitcoin forks. I would be very cautious of that. There's been a lot of particular concerns when it comes to these forks of how they can bag and tag you as far as identity, and many people don't mess with these forks for that simple reason, is they don't want to expose their identity if they do so. And then you have the historical right here from CoinDesk, the price here, and like I said, depending on when they created this Bitcoin address, it really could depend on how many forks are associated with that particular address. And then right here is the average transaction fees historically. All the way up here is at the height. So if you look here at the height of a bit of the kerfuffle here back in 2017, the Bitcoin average transaction fee was $54. That's just the USD value. That's not how many Satoshis is necessary per byte to do that. Right now we are kind of around, less than $2 for the average transaction fee. So that could matter when you're considering when the transaction is being sent, how much is being sent, how many Satoshis per byte. That's something that's going to have to be factored. Now, when you use a SegWit address, which is a three address, you do get a discount in the sending of the Bitcoin transactions. That allows for less fees being utilized on the blockchain. So you're using the prize address and you're sending multiple addresses. That's called batching, and you do it all at once to all these different addresses, and it comes out into like one transaction fee, even though you've sent to 100 different addresses at the same time. And by doing that, you really, really save, on the amount of Satoshis being spent, the fees being done, and allows for the disbursement of funds at one time. So people are not like, where am I getting mine, when you're doing it like one person at a time? In fact, you can do it like 50 at a time or 100 at a time. This is a pretty good, easy explanation of UTXO versus account balance model. UTXOs, again, are the unspent transactions. It's when you send your Bitcoin out, is however amount of Bitcoin you have, you send it out and then you get the change back, and that's your UTX, your UTXO. Is that unspent transaction. So right here. So let's take a look at a simplified example of how the UTX model works in Bitcoin transaction. Alex gains 12.5 Bitcoins through mining. Alex wallet is associated with one UTXO record of 12.5 Bitcoins. Alex wants to give Bob one Bitcoin. Alex wallet first unlocks her UTXO of 12.5 Bitcoins and uses the whole 12.5 as an input to the transaction. The transaction sends the 1 Bitcoin to Bob's address, and the remainder of 11.5 Bitcoin is sent back to Alice in the form of a new UTXO to a newly created address owned by Alice. Say there was another UTXO of 2 Bitcoins associated with Bob prior to step 2. Bob's wallet now shows his balance as 3 Bitcoins, but Bob's wallet now keeps track of 2 UTXOs, the first 2 Bitcoins and the new Bitcoin, one from before and one from the transaction in step 2. Each UTXO needs to be unlocked if Bob wants to send them. So if, say, Bob wanted to send 1 Bitcoin to Rochelle, he would have to unlock all 3 Bitcoin, both UTXOs, and send that 1 Bitcoin out towards Rochelle. And that changes again the whole UTXO for Bob. So let's get more into the weeds of batching. Like I said, it's taking from 1 Bitcoin address and then sending it to a bunch of people pretty much at the same time. And this saves in the fees, if you will. So right here, payment batching. This is from the Wicca. Very useful for high-frequency spenders or organizations. Moderately useful for low-frequency spenders or individuals. Every Bitcoin transaction must refer the funds being spent and provide proof that the transaction was authorized by the owner of the funds. You know, that you own the private key, if you will. To spend a single collection of funds takes a minimum of 79 bytes under normal circumstances. The same amount of block space is used no matter how many recipients are paid in that transaction. For example, consider the following scenario. Alice pays Bob in one transaction and then pays Charlie in a second transaction. Each transaction contains a minimum of 79 bytes relating to the funds being spent in total as 158. So the amount of bytes you're spending, amount of usage, if you will, you know, you've doubled it. Versus if Alice uses a single transaction to pay both Bob and Charlie, the single transaction only uses 79 bytes related to funds being spent and saving 50% of this field. The type of savings increase as more payments are added to the single transaction. So the cost per payment is just barely more than the cost of adding the bytes directly relating to that payment in the transaction. So the more people you add, the more saving. Plot below shows the cost per payment for a native SegWit transaction. So if you're using SegWit, and if you look at the graph here, so the bytes go down 2, 4, 6, 8 to 20. So you're around below 40 bytes for 20 payments in a single transaction. We see the cost drop more than 50% after 5 payments are added, with the savings increase up to 70% for SegWit transactions. Not shown is the saving increase up to 80% for legacy addresses, which is the 1 address. So there is a significant cost advantage of having a SegWit address versus a legacy address, if you will. Right here is the key point. Many wallets support batching payments. And graphical wallets is often a Bitcoin that allows you to add additional recipients to a transaction. In command line and RPC wallets, there is often a call such as send many that lets you pay multiple recipients. Note that there are other parts of the transaction that stay in constant size when payments are added, so the benefit stacks up faster than a fixed cost of just 79 bytes might suggest. So you have that. Here's a Medium article about the same thing. Bitcoin batching remains consistent even as transaction fees rise. So by using batching, you still have that same savings even if the fees kind of skyrocket for volatility reasons. And this article covers that. Coin joining. So this is important because people want to keep their privacy, you know, protected. They are about to receive quite a significant chunk in Bitcoin, and depending on the value in USD, if that matters for people, or however, just the amount of Bitcoin in general, they may not want to broadcast that out. They don't want their ID or KYC, AML, IP address, any of that to be tracked. So using of CoinJoin will allow for the obfuscation and tracking via blockchain, but give some additional privacy shields, if you will.
there is no way that you can be 100% private or safe. It's just not possible. What you can do is minimize your risk and minimize your detection and basically play the odds and make the odds more in your favor versus somebody who doesn't do any of these things. And CoinJoin is basically a mixing tool where you, for example, like Alice, Bob, Rochelle, John, Katie, and Juan all decided that they are going to mix their coins together. Like they have compiled together one Bitcoin a piece, six Bitcoins, and it goes into this pile and starts piecing up all the different Bitcoins and piecing them all up into different pieces to a point when it spits back out to these people and they get back their one Bitcoin. The origin or the UTXO is no longer associated with any of their previous histories. It's completely almost brand new in essence. And it's a way of protecting your identity, if you will. And it even in a sense also adds value to the Bitcoin, because if you automatically coin join your Bitcoins every time you do a transaction, anytime anyone gets that Bitcoin, they don't have to worry about anything about tainted history or anything associated with that. And they know that they have a good, strong value Bitcoin. And it has to do with fungibility. And there's different mechanisms that people are doing with fungibility. I'm not seeing too much of the consequences of fungibility issues, but it is something that is kind of getting increasingly on the horizon. And that's why you're seeing stuff like CoinJoin and other like Wasabi Wallet and other really hard privacy focus, or Samurai Wallet, if you will, focus wallets and services that are trying to protect people's UTXOs and trying to protect people's identity to extend or minimize their impact to where they're able to protect their privacy, particularly their financial privacy, if you will. Now, Lightning Network is another means besides just batching that the Bitcoin price can be dispersed. At present, I think Lightning is 0.05 is the largest you can send on the Lightning Network as far as Bitcoin goes. And you can do that considering that there might be, you know, just very small amounts of Bitcoin being dispersed to a bunch of people. Lightning might be an option to allow for the disbursement of those funds beyond just batching these addresses. You could batch, I believe, the addresses and send it through the Lightning Network. And that is another way, as currently as we speak, because there's no Lightning Network blockchain explorer, that you can protect people's privacy as well as save on fees and UTXOs and all that for people. And so there's a link in the show notes for that. And people can get their Bitcoin a little bit quicker. They're not waiting on the blockchain like 1 hour, 2 hours, depending on when it's being sent and the fee that's being utilized. So last bit I wanted to talk about was hardware wallets, or how are you going to store your Bitcoin? I would recommend OpenDime or their cold card wallet that they have. OpenDime is basically this USB stick that you don't have to be connected to the internet to utilize or anything of that nature. But what you can do is transfer funds to the OpenDime stick. And in order for the stick to actually be spent, you actually have to press this button on the USB stick that releases the private key, so you can input it into any wallet you want to use for a transaction. But for most people, what they do is they kind of use it like a dollar bill, if you will. So for example, say someone puts 0.5 Bitcoin on an OpenDime stick, which is, so that's 0.5 Bitcoin is $527, so $525. So instead of spending it, if you will, or opening up that private key, you just keep constantly handing the 0.5 for whatever transaction. Maybe it was a hotel stay for like 4 nights. The hotel owner gets it, 0.5 Bitcoin. It covers, you know, the cost for the you know, 5-night, 4-night, 4-day stay, or
or whatever. That hotel owner has to do, you know, payroll or whatever, or some service or whatever. So then it costs 0.5 Bitcoin. So all he has to do is hand that same open dime stick to the next person. That person accepts it, goes about their business, and then they either cash out or spend part of it, or they wait for when they have to spend 0.5 Bitcoin. And you can do a thing where maybe something casts only 0.25 Bitcoin, and you ask for the change back. So you hand someone 0.5 in Bitcoin, they hand you an open dime stick that's 0.25 in Bitcoin, so you got your change back. And it's a way of doing all these transactions that are not on the blockchain, but are still valid, because as soon as you open that private key and decide to input it, either cashing out into whatever dollar value you need or dispersing it to whatever mechanism you need to do it for, none of those previous histories or transaction histories are on the blockchain. The only transaction history is on the blockchain is when the Bitcoin went into the open dime stick, and then when the Bitcoin left the open dime stick. That's it. So you have no idea how many times or how many hands that open dime stick was sent throughout the world, basically. And so it's just another really neat privacy mechanism that's out there available for people. And they also have a cold wallet, which is a long-term storage wallet, available as well. And there's plenty of other Bitcoin wallets. There's, you know, Treasure, Ledger. All of them have their ups and downs. There's like Cold Steel, where you do everything like with a, you know, little steel input. Paper wallets, you know, depending on what it is your needs or your personal feel for your personal usage of your Bitcoin, you might want to do your research, which is the best mechanism for you to hold and have your Bitcoin. Or maybe you want to send it straight to the exchange and just cash out. You have no express interest of holding Bitcoin. That's completely up to you. And that's something for you as an individual hunter you need to figure out. So that's it. That's all I have about this episode. It's just like wanting to go beyond just the how to disperse the Bitcoin funds, but that there is a lot more to it. I mean, you have, just to kind of recap, you have potential airdrops, forks associated with the Bitcoin address, depending on when it was created. You know, it could be many, it could be very little. The UTXO, the Bitcoin address, whether it's a 1 or 3 SegWit, and then how as a group or individual hunter, maybe your pair, maybe your small group, maybe your large clan, how you disperse those funds. Are you going to batch things? Are you going to use Lightning Network, CoinJoin, send it straight to exchange and give people the USD value? These are things that within the clan or little hunter group or pair or as an individual hunter, if you are the winner of the prize, you need to figure out or decide for yourself. So that's it. That's it for this episode. My name is Hiroshi Shai. This is Satoshi's Treasure Hunters. And on with the hunt. You can find me on Instagram at Satoshi's underscore treasure, or on Twitter at Satoshi's Hunters. You can also listen to the podcast version of the show and contact me through Anchor FN at Hiroja-Shine. You can also support this show via Cash App at Cash App Hiroja, or scan the QR code or input the Bitcoin address below. Or you can go to Anchor FM Hiroja-Shive/support, where you can subscribe and be, in essence, a supporter of the show via that way.